Get the fuck up. Simon Says Get the Fuck Up. It's the Bitter End Podcast with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
And we are here to watch Universal Soldier 2 Brothers in Arms. It's the second episode of Season 4 where we are doing all things Universal Soldier for you.
Mm-hmm. And we're coming in hot with the second film in the series because this is the first of the films in the franchise that is deemed non-canonical.
Non-canonical.
Indeed. So, strong start here. Obviously, for those that that don't know, the Universal Soldier franchise is 6 films deep, and only half of those films are considered to be true canon, which is some next level shit.
That is outrageous.
Yeah. I don't know. It's got to be the franchise with the biggest amount of that doesn't counts. That I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, so this is a 50% failure rate in terms of getting their intellectual property to stick with the canon.
Yeah, I know.
So, and this is the first miss. So last week we watched the first Universal Soldier, which I liked a lot more than I thought I would. You're making an action fan out of me, potentially. Is it going to hold up this time around, 2 movies deep?
I don't think so. I mean, so this is a made-for-TV movie that came out in 1998. It was, I think, Universal Soldier 2 and 3 are both made for TV. And I think it was they originally came from like an aborted TV series idea for Universal Soldier. And I, for whatever reason, it ended up being 2 TV movies. And crucially, another thing with this, there is no trailer for Universal Soldier 2.
So too good to have a trailer.
We do not know what we are getting into. Well, we could give ourselves a little bit of a heads up, I think. Maybe by reading what's on the back of the DVD box.
Go ahead. Before you do, on the subject of this DVD box, can I just point out, this is one of the harder to find of the Universal Soldiers movies, I believe. So if you are one of the listeners that likes to watch the movies along with us, you can get this film, but like, do not beat yourself up if you have not been able to.
You'd probably be easier finding like a stream of it somewhere or something like that than it is to actually find a physical version of it. But we are hardcore, dedicated film media journalists.
Damn it!
So we had to have this deluxe double feature DVD. Right, so I'll paint you a picture here before we dive into
the
film.
What's it say on the box?
Universal Soldier 2, Brothers in Arms. Luke Devereaux, played by Matt Battaglia. Nope, never heard of him. And Veronica Roberts. So she's back. Very unusual, like in like action films, having like a female character recur. Unless, of course, you're dealing with like Speed 2.
Terminator
1 and 2. But it's all, yeah, it's one of those things. Well, actually, it's quite on point for 80s and 90s action films in that she's not played by the same actress.
Ooh.
That is the thing, like, you know, every Ninja Turtles film, different April O'Neil. Okay, so Veronica Roberts, recover and revive Luke's long-lost brother, Eric, played by Jeff Wincott, who has been suspended in a cryo chamber for decades. Together, they attempt to expose the Unisol program led by Mauser, Gary Busey. Yes!
Boo Boo himself.
Big Boo.
His name's Mauser.
Or Mazur, M-A-Z-U-R.
Oh, okay. M-A-Z-U-R. Mazur. Because Mauser's the baddie from Police Academy.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay. It's crossover. Crossover. Shared universe. Which recycles dead soldiers to create the ultimate mercenary army. So I am excited for Long Lost Brother. That sounds like some serious bullshit to me. I'm also very interested to see what Matt Battaglia and Jeff Wincott's Cajun accents are like.
Yeah, that's going to be strong. And just
that
to see
is canon.
Some good quality Gary Boo Boo Booey. Like Gary Boo Boo Boosie action.
Yeah, he's got I hope he bares his teeth like a maniac.
You know he will, buddy.
I fucking hope so. So I think we should just dive on into the film. But before we do, there is the matter of the IMDb guessing game. Todd,
okay, buddy.
You're a returning contestant on the show.
Yeah.
Universal Soldier 2, Bros in Arms, 1998. What do you think it gets? Universal Soldier 1 from 1992 got a lean 6.
Well, I'm just happy to be here, buddy. Thanks for having me on the show. Long-time listener, second-time guesser. I'm going to say that it's going down. I know that this one is non-canonical, but it can't go down too far because of Big Boo Boo Boosie.
Mm.
He would never lend his name to a turkey. He's a
gold seal of quality.
He is. So I'm going to say 4 on the nose.
Well, the score is an on the nose score, but it's not a 4.
3?
It is a 3.
It's a 3.
I'm afraid, sir, you're going home with a 3, but thanks for playing.
Oh, at least I got the cuddly toy.
This might have been when Big Boo Boo Boosie was really hopped up on something else.
Hopped up on Boosie, I think.
Yeah. He is literally high on himself.
Okay, so the score has halved.
It has halved.
It's done a howling on us.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay.
So, with that said,
is there anything else to do other than link arms like two brothers?
Yeah.
And subject ourselves to what Boosie's got?
I guarantee it will be interesting. Well, that was a very different game, wasn't it?
It was. It was different.
It was, a tonal shift that I think you could compare to that of The Howling to Howling 2, your sister is a werewolf, in terms of just like, oh, they have no money to make this.
And yet the soundtrack is constant. And I mean, it opens with the entirety of the song Spirit in the Sky.
That must have been where all the money went, yeah.
Can't be cheap, but that song is great and sets the tone straight away. But like, just the cheapest, dodgiest fonts, weird edits where they like snap into like sped up footage and then slow motion
down, yeah,
for no reason. There's a bit where they can't afford, they've got a plane that they can't afford to film taking off, so they just have Gary Vusey like walk onto the plane, and then the plane kind of like sped up drives off a little bit and then like fades out.
Yeah,
it's but, like the runway's still there.
Yeah, it's like it's a ghost plane and it's like oh my god, it's gone.
No,
it's
no.
A cloaking device.
They just couldn't film themselves taking off.
They didn't have... Well, because they have one scene of a helicopter actually flying, and they couldn't afford to have, like, two vehicles in the air.
You know what else cost a lot of money?
What's that?
Fucking Burt Reynolds' moustache. Burt Reynolds is in this movie.
Yes.
Moustache only. Like, he spends the entire film talking on the phone. We'll get to it, really. But he's talking on the phone. We get these tightly cropped shots of his moustache, and we're like, is that Big Bertie Ray Ray? Is that Burt Reynolds himself? And then the last shot of the movie is just like, it pans up, and it's like, ooh, that's his face.
There it is. That's the full package.
That's what the money went on.
Mm-hmm. Damn right. So let's just take it from the top here. There's a little bit of a recap at the beginning in terms of like, there's a little bit of text on screen to kind of jog your memory, I think.
Yeah, because like 6 years has passed since the original Universal Soldier movie, so it just captures you up about there's this like Universal Soldier program of resurrecting soldiers, and then they show us a weird new version of the footage from the last fight of the first film.
Yes.
With new actors. Like,
yeah.
Recapping basically what was Dolph getting thrown into the Combine Harvester.
It's very strange, especially coming in hot off of just watching Universal Soldier, just to be kind of like, hang on, this looks like a fan-made version. Because the decrease in budget is very tangible on screen. You can see that. And also use like different actors who aren't as good as Dolph Lundgren and Jean-Claude Van Damme. And it's like, it's weird. I don't know if I've really ever seen that in films where, you know, like they don't have returning cast, so they just redo scenes from the original
with new actors.
Yeah, it's very strange.
But at the same time, it sets the tone quite nicely for we do actually want you to have watched the first film. Like, oh, we're not gonna like Highlander 2 this in a weird way where it's gonna contradict. It doesn't really contradict. It's just like, it's like, no, this is, we're following on. It's got, we've got bold ambitions. This is gonna be Highlander 2. Like, we mean it.
Yeah, it basically picks up straight after the events of part one, like almost like the very next day, basically. Yeah, and it's definitely a film that requires you to know what the fuck is going on. Like, it kind of explains things along the way, but it definitely would help if you've seen the original. So,
Tom, what the fuck is going on?
We have like the reenactment, like that's all you can say, is of like the end of the first film. And then you've got Luc Daveau in a bath of ice, classic Luke.
Now played by Matt Battaglia.
Yeah.
Who is like, he's a man that kind of personifies the male duck face.
Yes, he does a ducky pout in every scene.
It's his one look, duck pout, brooding duck pout, like top lip just slightly overlapping the bottom.
And he looks silly. And he's there in a bath of ice kissing Veronica.
She's teaching him how to kiss. And he's like, I do not understand the objective. And she says, oh, well, just do it anyway. And then he does. But then he's like, he like kisses her. And then he like licks his lips to try and like recognize the taste. And she's like, no, you're not supposed to taste. You're supposed to feel. And he tries again. He's not fast. He's not that fussed about it. She goes, oh, we'll keep practicing.
He gets a bit more into it. But like the whole thing is like, I thought at the end of the first film that Luke had kind of become human again.
I feel like you might have just inferred that, and that wasn't actually, because I didn't pick that up during the watch of the first film. You said something on the podcast of like, oh, and then all his memories come back. But I didn't remember seeing that in the film.
There's definitely a bit in the first one where he goes, oh, I remember everything now.
Okay.
Where it all comes back. And that's why he knows his mother. He knows all this kind of...
Okay.
This stuff kind of comes back to him. And at that point, in the first film, he stops being quite so stony and like mechanical and becomes a little bit more human.
Okay.
But not that much more, because Jean-Claude Van Damme didn't really do it very well. In this, it seems like the reset button has been hit and he's gone back to being like Robo Luc Daveau. But then he just seems stuck like that. Like, you kind of think like, oh, maybe that's just how his character was before he went to Vietnam. Like, he was like this weird duck pouty, like sort of like Forrest Gump on steroids guy.
and that's the thing, this, the like the gumpiness of him really, really comes through. Just, you know, you think it's stupid in the first film that Jean-Claude Van Damme was learning how to eat. He had to teach himself how to eat. Like, literally every single human interaction or basic function, this guy has to learn from scratch in this movie. He has to learn what a beer is. He has to learn how to kiss.
How to play pool.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things in there. But basically, Veronica, like, and Luke are still wanted for the events of the stitch-up that was done on them in the events of the first film.
Yeah.
Veronica's like, I'm going to get Luke to, like, I've still got some guys in the news team who don't think I'm a killer or whatever. I can get Luke to them and we can blow the lid off of this thing. And then we've kind of cut to the White House with just Burt Reynolds' moustache talking on the phone to our good pal, Gary Boo Boo Boosie.
Now, Boo Boo Boosie, he is the guy that has the scene with Spirit in the Sky. He's trundling along in a truck. He's talking on the phone to Big Bert's moustache. He rocks up in the truck. He turns up in this sort of deserted area. There's all these soldiers there. And he's like, I suppose you're wondering why you're here. And they're like, yes, sir, we were wondering why we were here. And he goes, you're here because you're the best that the army has to offer. And they go, thank you, sir. And then he guns them all down. And he's killing them so that he can turn them into universal soldiers. But yeah, as he's gunning them down, a single tear rolls down Boosie's cheek.
Oh, the single tear of Boosie, I think, is maybe my favourite thing in this film. I just, oh, that's heady. That is,
yeah, it cuts you. And meanwhile, we cut back to our man Luke Davrow and his girlfriend Veronica in the ice bath, and he stands up like totally nude, and she laughs because he's like not realizing that he's nude because he doesn't know anything about basic human life, and she, and he's like, what is this sound you make? And she's like, oh, it's laughter, you know, like a joke, like haha. And he goes, haha. And she goes, yeah, you know, it's just, it's like laughter is life. Laughter is life. I'll try and teach you a joke. Knock, knock. And he goes, why would I answer the door when you are already in the room? God. And she goes, we'll deal with this later. And let me tell you, they'll deal with it later. This is important plot stuff.
Yeah.
Remember the knock, knock joke.
Yeah. So we've then got, go back to Gary Boo 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 C, the sad crying clown. And he is... So they're recruiting the second Universal Soldier team with these new dead guys at the request of Burt Reynolds' moustache. But then they're also like finding out what happened with Luke and Dolph Lundgren at the end of the last film. And turns out Luke has another tracking device in him.
Those maniacs!
After they cut the other one out. But apparently it's one that they can just go like, just press beep and it'll just go like, dear Luke, please come home. And so, like, Luke is in the middle of the night, just gets up and goes, well, I'm off. And he fucks off. And, like, so he...
Why didn't they turn that on in the first film?
Exactly. And then they... So he, like, basically takes his parents' car, goes on off back to the Unisol base. And then Veronica is like, oh, shit, I've got to go after him.
Yeah. And so she follows, because his car's shit, right? Mm. So she gets like a good sports car and she's like trundling down the road. And then she sees the broken down car and she's like, fuck, okay. So I know he was here. It's nearby the train station. She goes to the train station. She bribes the train station guy to try and find out what train he had gotten on.
Because she can tell that he was on the train because he sees that, like, the guy in the ticket booth has got one of the Unisol I'm getting too hot watches.
Looks a bit like a Fitbit.
Yeah. It's kind of like,
hey, where'd you get that?
He's like, there's some joker traded me this for a train ticket. It doesn't even tell the time. And it's kind of like, I mean, that's your fucking dumb mistake, really. If you're trading tickets for just like, hey, do you want my shoes?
And then she's like, that was my brother's. I need to know where he was going. He's like, oh, sorry, we can't tell you where people were going. Oh, what? But you can trade train tickets for like shit watches.
Yeah, that was weird. And then he finds out, oh, he's gone to Chicago.
Then we get a cut of Luke is on the train to Chicago. We see him having a nice interaction with a little girl. She comes up to him, totally unattended, no parents around, just like little girl traveling to Chicago on her own on the train.
Yeah, as you do.
Sits opposite a strange duck patty man and goes, hi, my name's Annie. What's yours? And he goes, GR44, which is his code name. And she goes, wow, are you a rap singer? Good line. Like that. And then she's got this like little monkey, stuffed cuddly monkey. Mm. And he's like, what is monkey? And he's like, oh, it's for holding, you cuddle it. And she gives it to him. And he just sits there cuddling this monkey, looking wistfully off out of the window on a train. It's a very nice moment with some really complicated facial expressions going on.
Very duck facey. There's also a lot of scenes in this where he's like riding the trains and he's standing between the rail carriages while sweeping snow covered like hillsides like roll by, and he's got his shirt off, you know, to cool down because he's a Universal Soldier.
Cool down.
But also showing that the only reason that this guy has been hired is because he is cut as shit. Like, he is ripped.
Still not like necessarily up to like Johnny Van Damme levels.
I don't know. I think that he's more sort of chiseled than Van Damme, but Van Damme had a bit of star power and could jump kick. This guy is only there because he is buff, because he is not so good.
Not so good at the old... Yeah, like, not so good with the jump kicks.
Yeah, like the sort of like the Terminator 2 ripping off like roboticness of Luke Davrow in this film is way more off the chart than in the first film. I feel like he's ridiculously kind of like,
yeah.
What is door or something like that, you know, ball of fire in the sky.
Like, yeah, it's so dumb.
Now waterfall from sky, why? And then, like, so a lot of the film at this point is just Veronica hunting down Luke, which is apparently for her fucking easy. She will not be outrun by anybody. Luke gets on a train to Chicago, so she gets in her car, drives there, gets there before him. He's had a head start on her. He's like, well, I'm off. And then he gets picked up at the train station by some Universal Soldier goons, take him to the Universal Soldier secret base.
Which is on a boat.
Yeah, kind of cool. And then she's kind of like, oh, they're taking it. And then she just follows them, like, no problems at all. She is a fucking super sleuth. She's great at this. And yeah, and then we get to the Unisol base, find out what they're up to.
And they're up to more of the same. Burt Reynolds' moustache has ordered more Universal Soldiers to be made. They want to rehabilitate Luke Davro in because every soldier costs $2.5 million individually, so they can't spare a single one.
Yeah, they make a big thing about, like, Universal Soldiers have, like, no money left, but at the same time, they go around just murdering people the whole time and going, like, turn them into a soldier, turn them into a soldier.
Yeah. And basically, it transpires that Gary Busey's going a bit rogue. He's being ordered by Burt Reynolds' moustache to, like, mysteriously make a bunch more, but he's actually kind of secretly got his own plans for, like, he wants a bit of domination, make a little bit of money on the side, like,
yeah,
and use them for bad.
And the other thing that kind of contradicts what happens in the first film, or it's a bit iffy, is that Burt Reynolds' moustache is going on about how they don't have funding anymore for Universal Soldier, and he's, every time we see him, there's an establishing shot of the White House. So the thing is that apparently the Universal Soldier program in the first film is off the books and not being financed by the government. So, like, if he was doing it off the books anyway, working with the government, then who's pulled the funds?
Well, Tom, this is a spoiler for the end of the movie, but we may as well reveal it now. The very last shot of the movie is one of these phone calls with Burt Reynolds' moustache, and then the camera finally pans up to show the rest of the face, and we go, it was Burt Reynolds' entire face in on that. It wasn't just the moustache, like, going rogue while the rest of his face was doing something else. Then the camera pans down to his desk. We see a nameplate. Can't remember what the name is, just some name. But the job title on it says Deputy Director of the CIA.
Okay, yeah.
So deputy, not the director, for a start.
I think he's funneling funds.
Funds for this, like, mysterious black ops for, like, some kind of coup.
Yeah. And the whole thing is that they're making this second team, and they're like, we're going rogue, we're going mercenary.
Private funding, like, private contracts.
So they're basically going to farm out the Unisols to the highest bidder for, you know, to do whatever dirty work they want to do.
I still can't get on board with Unisol as
a word. It's not.
It's like something you'd buy from Boots.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like something you'd be a bit embarrassed to buy at the chemist.
Yeah, because, Mum, can you go get me some Unisol?
Oh, mate, you definitely wouldn't tell your mum that you needed some Unisol. I think it's probably a little bit got some swelling and some itching. Unisol to relieve itchy, irritable swelling. And then Veronica is the most capable person in this film.
She's rad. She steals the show.
Yeah, because basically, the Universal Soldier program is very poorly guarded, as it was in the first film. In this film, it's still very poorly guarded. They keep on making a point of the scientists all going, like, we don't have enough staff. There's a lot of staffing issues. But basically, Veronica, like, finds a female guard, nobbles her with a big stick.
But for international listeners, can we just make a point to say that nobbles means kills?
Yeah. Well, she knocks her out. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Lingo issues. So she dresses up as a soldier, gets her ID, like her ID pass, and then just walks around the base at, like, completely freely, walks into, like, one room, downloads all of this information on the Universal Soldier program about where their tracking devices are kept and things like that. Because there's a scene where the tracker that was taken out of Luke had another tracker up his bum.
Yeah, it was up his bum.
And they had to cut his bum open and take this tracker out. And they put a new one in. And she's like, yeah, that guy's got a VCR up his butt. And yeah, she downloads all this information onto mini discs.
I miss minidiscs so much.
This film that dates the film in like the 6 months when minidiscs were a thing. So she gets downloads, a load of more information about the Unisol program. And then she goes into this other secret room. This point, we should probably point out at the beginning of the film, Luke's parents pointed out that he had a brother who died in Vietnam.
Yep, sure, that won't come up later in the film. Tom, yeah. What's in the room?
It's Luke's brother who died in Vietnam.
What?
Yeah, so he had an older brother who went to Vietnam like way before him, died, never came back. He's there frozen, and she watches like a video recording in there of like him being brought back to life. But it didn't take. He like killed the... He couldn't be controlled, so they've just frozen him in a cabinet with all these other like other frozen
failed
bodies,
experiments,
other failed basically. Experiments. Like he's like a Frankenstein in there.
They're keeping him there for spare body parts. She finds like a drawer that's just full of frozen eyeballs, and
yeah. There's one like drawer that's full of ears. Dolph Lundgren would have loved that.
Oh, lovely! That's like him going to the bead shop and making a nice bracelet or something.
I mean, it's not as good if you don't pick your own.
No.
And then she's like, no, and she smashes the glass, and suddenly he's like, oh, I'm awake now, does some very suspect acting while he's kind of like coming out of frozen sleep. And then she's kind of like, oh, you're right. And he's like, yeah, who are you? He's like, I'm your brother's mate. He's like, wicked, let's go. So like, basically... Eric is way more compos mentis than
yeah,
Luke.
He's not lost his mind.
He's got like quips. I mean, it makes you question whether Luke ever had his mind, because like when he's reunited with his brother, he's like, oh man, it's just like old times, you know, like when, you know, you didn't know what the moon was.
I mean, genuinely, there's a bit earlier in the film where Luke is in like army fatigues, and she sends him back to like a suitcase in the back and is like, look, you've got to get changed because like we're on the run.
Something
again.
Incognito.
Again, something incognito. He opens up the suitcase, he pulls out some like sexy women's lingerie and is like about to start getting dressed into that to be incognito. And she has to look at him and be like, mwah, mwah.
Yeah.
This guy cannot do anything for himself.
Apart from shoot people or kick them in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, but basically Eric's back. They go on the run. There is a faux pas where after coming out of the freezer, she says, we got to get you out of here. You could freeze to death. No, that's how the Universal Soldiers work. They need to be cold. If you heat him up, he'll die.
That's true.
So that was a bit of a boo-boo.
That is astute.
Yeah, So then
they like
we get some more scenes with Burt Reynolds' moustache in the dark. At this point, I make the note, Burt Reynolds is Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget. In this film, that is what he is. He is a shadowy figure in a chair on a telephone.
With a cat, presumably.
Oh, if only he had a cat. That would be amazing. It's also at this point that I really start to appreciate Gary Busey's little cravat that he wears throughout the whole film. Like,
he's got this amazing like burgundy cravat that matches a burgundy jumper that he's wearing. Thing is, the cravat is classy. The jumper, not so classy. The jumper is like a big, baggy, oversized Sunday afternoon jumper that your dad would wear after he's eaten a big dinner. But like to accentuate that, Boo Boo Boosie has this little matching cravat to just like,
oh, it just classes it up,
bams it up a notch.
Yeah. This is also the like around this point in the film that I feel that Universal Soldier 2 is taking place in an alternate mirror universe to Universal Soldier 1, because all of the Universal Soldiers with their very distinctive little eye visor monitors, they're all on the wrong side.
Yeah, they're on the left eye in the first film. They're all on the right eye in this film.
And then we have a recreation of the scene where Luke has to cut the tracker out of his bum again, because Veronica's like, they put it back up your bum, mate. You've got to cut that out. But it's on the other side. It's on the other side of his bum this time. And so that just makes me think that everything that's going on here is like some sort of like parallel mirror Universal Soldier world, which explains why they have the different cast. So this is why these two films aren't canon. These are happening like in like an alt reality.
Yeah, and the only thing that links them is the really heavy movie time spent on the main actors' bums. Like, both of these movies so far have
a lot of bums.
Really bum-centered.
Yeah.
And I don't mind it. I'm just saying it's odd. It's a lot more bum happening than you would normally get in an action film of this ilk.
Yeah, definitely. Especially like a made-for-TV action film. But basically, Boosie kind of goes rogue. He assumes control of the Unisols, like, and kills whoever, like, the commander was. And goes to do a bit of a shady deal.
Shady deal with a terrorist, where the terrorist gives him diamonds in return for... The agreement is that the terrorist will provide 50 dead bodies.
Mm.
And Boo Boo Boosie will turn them into 50 Universal Soldiers for
mm-hmm,
him.
Mm-hmm.
Terrorist gives him the diamonds, goes, cool, all right then. And then Boo Boo Boosie tells the Universal Soldiers he has with him to kill the terrorist, keeps the diamonds. I mean, what a dumb terrorist.
How did he get that far in the terrorism game with that kind of antics? And then it's at this point that Luke and his brother Eric and Veronica are travelling to go and meet up with Big Boo Boo Boosie.
I guess for some sort of showdown.
Yeah, like, basically Boosie was like, you need to... Oh, no, because Boosie was... Oh, no, Eric isn't with them at this point. Eric has been recaptured. Eric gets recaptured by Boosie, and he's, like, kind of like the ace in the hole for him. So he's like, oh, you'll trade me the girl for your brother. And so, Luke and Veronica are on their way. There is a really nice bit, though, while they're on their way, where they pick up a hitchhiker who starts playing like this country song in the van while they're driving to have their deadly showdown. And Luke learns to sing.
He just starts mumbling along. Like the country singer's like, oh, I fell in love when I saw your eyes. And then, yeah, Devereaux is like,
saw your eyes.
But like, it's not even as melodic as that. Yeah. He's like, I fell in love,
saw your eyes. and this scene is the learning to eat scene of the film. Which I liked. And
dude knows how to punch, though.
He does know how to punch. He knows very little. It may not even be that this was part of the character. Do you think that this is just the actor? That he just doesn't know how to do anything? They just had to point him in a direction and go, hit them.
Dodgy boss, yeah.
I'll kill Gary Boosie, yeah. I'll go get him. but basically, they have the showdown. And my God, the Universal Soldiers are so bad at guarding their base. Basically, like, they create a distraction with this busker so that Veronica and Luke can go and rescue Eric from the van that the Unisols rolled around.
They just got him in the van.
Fucking Universal Soldier Scooby van. They get them out. Gary Boosie turns around and goes, what the fuck is going on here? So there's like some guy in, like, it's like, it's like, what do you mean they're gone? And the Universal Soldier inside the van goes, I don't know, they're gone. It's like, are the diamonds still there? And he just opens up the box and goes, grenades. Because they've taken the diamonds and replaced them with the grenades. The bus explodes to like... Because that's what you do when you have a slow motion explosion. Like, make it like a scene from like the Nutcracker.
So bizarre. I mean,
very weird.
Classical music's cheap at least to use because the composers, most of them aren't alive anymore.
Yeah, they blew it all on Spirit in the Sky, so they had to go with that. And
then it all boils down to this big showdown where they end up
in a country and western bar,
a fucking line dancing bar. Now the scars of Howling Seven, New Moon Rising, are still heavy and fresh with me and Tom. So as soon as I saw this line dancing, I clenched up. But it's not that bad.
Mm.
And we get a couple of nice scenes. We get Luke's brother trying to teach Luke how to play pool, and Luke is like, I hit ball, and he's like, no, you have to hit one ball with the other ball, and he's like, I do not understand game.
Yeah.
And then basically baddies all pile in, like knock about with the line dancers. And they have the big final fight, right?
Mm.
And the final fight, it just kind of boils down to, oh, Veronica bonks Boosie on the head with a pool cue and like pushes him off like a little balcony.
Yeah.
And we think he's dead.
We do.
Until a short while later when he comes back and he's looking a little bit out of breath, and it's like the one little bit of running that Boosie was required to do in his contract.
He's like, thank God I got squibbed quickly and shot down.
And then, they squib him, and Luke, our main hero, says the line, it's time to take out the garbage.
Oh, that's because he's fighting another one of the Universal soldiers, and basically... A bit like the Combine Harvester in the first one, you get Chekhov's like
garbage disposal,
garbage truck. Yeah. You go like, well, I think I know what's going to happen here. To the point that he goes, it's time to take out the garbage. Kicks him. The guy doesn't really fly into the garbage truck. He kind of just climbs in like willingly. He kind of like stumbles back. Goes, oh no, I'm getting in the bin. Oh
better
no,
not press the button.
But, oh no. It's really the setup. It's not smooth,
but he gets that killer line out of it.
Yeah, but during this scene that Eric, the brother in arms, gets shot.
Pow pow, clack clack, and he doesn't have the serum. He's not in a cold place.
And he didn't take to the Unisol program properly.
So
he doesn't regenerate in the same way.
And then he's dead, and he's lying there dead on like face up on the very pool table, Tom, where he was just a few moments earlier trying to teach his younger brother how to play pool, and they were having this tender moment, which reminds me of Todd's moments of tenderness. So, the moment of tenderness for this movie is a real tearjerker, guys. Eric is dead. He's on the pool table, and his brother Luke is there. Now, do not forget that Luke is a guy that does not know a single thing about the world except for punching. There was a moment earlier where they were drinking beer, and Luke is basically like, what is beer? And he's like, oh, he's like, it's this drink. And so you drink it, and he goes, it says, Surgeon General says, do not operate machinery after you beer. After you drink beer. And then he goes, we should not drive after this. And Eric goes, huh, good one. You see, you can make a joke.
So that was a joke. Yes, yeah, so that made us think, oh, Luke has always been like this.
Yeah. And so when he sees his brother there on the pool table, he's like prodding him and shoving him and going like, Luke. So going, prodding him and shoving him and going, Eric. And Veronica is like, no, buddy, he's dead, man. He's gone. And Luke sits and he thinks, and he leans into his brother's dead body and he goes, knock, knock. And calling back from earlier where she tried to teach him that knock, knock joke. And she goes, no, he's dead. Don't you understand? And he goes, ah, but you said earlier, laughter is life.
Not a dry eye in the house.
Oh, so weepy, so tender. And laughter is life. But it's not enough.
It's not enough,
it's
Luke.
It's not enough. But he finally kind of learns a little something about the world. Sadly, slightly too late.
Yeah. I was pretty gutted about Eric dying because he is so much more entertaining than Luke.
Yeah, so and it means he can't be in part three.
I'm worried about that, about part three. And then that's kind of the end of the film. We basically just have, like, Burt Reynolds now has a whole face, not just a moustache, on the phone, just being like, resurrect the team. Like, they all got killed, but he's like, ah, just bring them back
we
together.
We don't see who he's talking to, because it can't be Boo Boo Boosie, because he's
no,
dead.
It was just one of the scientists from before, the head scientist. Like, bring him back, we're gonna... do some more
stuff. We're gonna do another movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you ain't seen nothing yet.
And that is it. Which, yeah, we're done with Universal Soldier 2 Brothers in Arms. Tom, what did you think?
So this film and the next one were originally kind of like made as with the intention of being a TV series. And it kind of has that first three episodes of a TV series vibe about it, in that, you know, when you're trying to slow build to something, like, it was about 15 minutes towards the end. It's kind of like, when is the finale happening? When is, like, Gary Busey still has to die and we've only got 10 minutes left? So it was a bit draggy, because it's that thing that, you know, you kind of, you don't, with these kind of like action-y TV series, you kind of like set stuff up, but you don't want to, you don't blow your wad in the first few episodes. So this film really suffers from being made with a TV format in mind rather than a film format, but it's, I think it was like surprisingly kind of, I think maybe just because a lot of the franchises we've looked at just ignore things wholesale, I think this is quite true to what they set up in the first one and does quite a nice job at following up kind of what was put down in the first one. Like, it's not done very well, but I see what they were driving at. You could have done, if you got the original gang back together and had a bigger budget and like tightened up the script a bit, like it could be a more satisfying sequel.
Yeah. I mean, the same script would have worked just as well with the original team if they just had a little more money, basically. Few little, you know, enough money for a second pass at the screenplay, enough money for the original cast, like, blah, 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 blah. I would have missed Dolph, but, like, other than that, like...
Yeah.
It's fine, yeah. I think it deserves higher than a 3.
Yeah, I mean, not much higher.
3.5?
Yeah, like, it's bad, but it's watchable, and there were things in it that I liked, even though it was just a bit of a kind of, it just kind of trundles along. It doesn't really kind of like try and poke you in the eye and get all in your face and kind of, it doesn't try and offend you. It just kind of like, hey, I'm Universal Soldier 2, brothers and thumbs. I'm just going to, don't mind me. I'll just be here for about 90 minutes and then I'll be gone. It's okay. And I'm like, that's cool. You just do your thing. And,
you do you.
And then we'll just get on with our lives. So it's cool. Universal Soldier 3... Looking forward to seeing some more of Burt Reynolds. I'm a bit worried that Luke cannot carry this. Although, actually, looking at the DVD box, Jeff Wincott is still credited as being in it. Do you think he'll come back?
Jeff Wincott is the actor that played Eric, Luke's brother.
If Eric comes back, I'm all in.
I'm keen. I mean, on the DVD box, we are looking at the DVD box right here, guys, and on the cover of the box there's a picture of Eric the brother with that eyepiece thing, the Universal Soldier telescopic eyepiece, which I don't think he wore in the film we just watched.
Oh, maybe like when they're saying resurrect the team, they'll get his dead body and put him in Unisol team 3.
But I thought he couldn't take to the Unisol program.
Well, rules, fuck him. So it'll be like, we'll have some like Luke versus Eric. Ooh. Now that is
an exciting proposition, and I am keen to hear it.
Indeed. Now, would you like to hear something else, Todd?
Dude, I'm all ears.
Would you like to hear a little bit of story time? Oh, yes.
Oh, my God, I absolutely do.
Yes, so this is the return of the Storytime feature where I am reading from the novelization of the first Universal Soldier film. This is a novel written by Robert Tyne, based on the screenplay by Dean Devlin.
I like the tagline on the cover of the book, almost human, almost perfect, almost under control.
So this is a section from Chapter 3. And this is a scene after Luke has kind of had his like flashback during the dam scene, and they are wiping the Unisol's minds. So sit back, relax, and enjoy a little bit of story time with Domini D. Each of the Universal Soldiers reached for a small red button set in the arm of his seat. As soon as it was pressed, the top of the backseat opened and a multi-pronged, spiky silver device emerged, travelling up the back of the soldier's head, powered by a small electric motor. The apparatus looked like the metallic hand of a robot.
The steel fingers of the fist clamped firmly on the head of each man, and materializing from the palm of the contraption was a long, shiny, silver hypodermic needle. The shaft jabbed hard and long into the back of the skull of each inert man, slicing through the bone of the cranium. The image was a nightmarish one, but the Universal soldiers didn't react to the jab deep into the soft tissues of their brain. They experienced no pain whatsoever. Garth did. He winced and grimaced and had to turn away. He had a lifelong fear of needles, and seeing a dozen driven deep into the heads of unflinching men, buried into their brains, did nothing for his phobia. Woodward smiled when he saw his assistant's discomfort. You'll just never get used to this part, will you? Nope. Garth busied himself watching the dials on his console, paying elaborate attention to the dose of memory-cleaning serum each man was getting. It helped him take his mind off the hideous scene on the screens. Okay, said Woodward, that's enough. And we'll have a little bit more of the novelization of Universal Soldier next week.
That was fantastic. I really, really liked it. It got quite intense. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if some of our listeners with, you know, a faint disposition might have had a little funny turn, almost passed out there while they were listening to that. It got very intense. I was into it.
Yeah, like it's a bit more visceral than that scene comes off in the film.
Yeah, I don't remember like a big robotic clamp on their heads or anything like that. I just remember a little syringe.
Yeah, it's just a needle. So like, yeah, I'm trying to find things that are interesting in this book, or like kind of flesh out, like maybe take a short scene and make it a bit longer.
Now, I wonder if that was something that was in the screenplay, but then when they shot it, they decided, well, we can't afford the robotic hands. Or I wonder if that was an addition by the author.
By Robert Tyne.
By Robert Tyne, where he was like, no, I want robot hands in this. It's important.
Yeah, I guess like it's a little bit of artistic license there. It's kind of, that's kind of fun. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Stick a big needle in your brain and mush it about.
Yeah, and then poor Garth, the assistant, because he was in the movie and we really like Garth.
Yeah.
Because no matter what he did, everyone was always shouting at him, being like, oh, for God's sake, Garth.
Yeah, Garth, he was a tragic character in that film. But yeah, see how it unfolds. I haven't found anything, like, I haven't finished reading like the whole book yet. So I wanted to try and find something that just doesn't exist in the film.
Well, that
is my white whale.
All right. Well, I think we are done for the day, man.
We done.
Thank you very much for listening to us talk about Universal Soldier 2, Brothers in Arms, and we hope that you'll join us next time to hear us talk about Universal Soldier 3, Unfinished Business.
Yeah. Ka-clack.
Ka-clack, ka-clack. Glock, glock, glock. Pa-pow, pa-pow. Pew, pew, pew. Don't forget that you can help us influence what we're going to be talking about for season 5.
Mm.
If you go to our Twitter page at BitterEndPod, or find us on Facebook at BitterEndPod. If you look at the top of those pages, there'll be a pinned post, and that will have a link to a survey where you can help vote for what we'll talk about for season 5. It'll either be Nightmare on Elm Street, Fast and the Furious, or Air Bud. Let us know. If you don't mind, while you're there, you can answer a couple of other questions to help us make these podcasts better for you. You don't have to answer them if you don't have time. Can't be asked.
You just want to tell us what the fuck we should be watching. Just go on there, have a click. You don't need to have like an account on Facebook or Twitter.
No,
to
find the
to
link.
To find the link. So just get on there and tell us what the fuck we should shut up and watch.
Yeah, if you've never gotten in touch with us before, now is the time, because we would. It's so quick, so easy. You don't need to sign in. It's all you got to do. That'd be great. Thanks, guys. And until next time, I am Todd Jordan.
I am Tom Denny.
Clock, 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 bang, 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 b